This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 19. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's been going on the last week, Mike?
Not a whole lot, just wrestling with some ornery code, I'll call it. I'm working with this programming API that bills itself as being able to do things in a parallel manner. And I think what I'm actually running into is race conditions because it doesn't actually handle parallel stuff very well. So that's my technical problems for the week.
That actually reminds me of, have you heard, I think Paul Graham talked a little bit about it, but he talked about how there are good problems and bad problems in programming. And the good problems are like solving a business problem. And the bad problems are coding against buggy APIs and business politics and company politics and stuff. And it totally, when you bring that up, it reminds me of like, this is the worst part of coding, is dealing with someone else's crappy code, because it's unpredictable and it doesn't make you a better programmer. You know, at least if you're solving a problem or you're learning something new, you can be like, oh, even if this is hard work, next week or next year, I'll be better for it. But coding against a buggy API, there's no value to you at all. It sucks.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I totally agree. I think I remember reading that as well. It's awful because I'm not learning anything. All I'm learning is that the people who built this API didn't know what they were really doing.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, for me, I recorded a podcast this afternoon with Jason and Justin from TechZing, and it's a pretty cool podcast. You should check it out. And listeners, if you haven't checked it out, there are a couple of developers down in LA. They're both doing essentially kind of micropreneur type stuff. They don't target small niches. One of them has built a Twitter client called Plugio at plugio.com, and the other has been working on an app for a long time, about a year, called App Ignite, and he's trying to get it out. So they're not like vertical niches. They're not the traditional stuff, you know, Mike and I would talk about, but it's still really interesting because they're doing it on their own, and they have either full-time or consulting jobs, and they're launching these products on the side, and they're really smart guys. So I had a blast. We talked for a long time. They're going to have to edit it down. I think we talked for like 2 hours. So it should be an interesting podcast. I think it's episode 65 or something if you want to check it out. But I had a blast with those guys. And then the other thing I want to talk about is someone brought up that in an early episode of this podcast, I mentioned that I had acquired a product, but I wasn't going to say what it was right then until I'd kind of turned it around. And so I figured I'd announce it on here. It's not that big of a deal. I've talked about it elsewhere, but the product is weddingtoolbox.com, and it's a website for engaged couples to plan and share their wedding online. And so it just basically, it's kind of like a website builder, but it's totally focused on the wedding niche. And I've had it for a few months now, and I'm just working on some basic SEO and other stuff. And I'm actually trying to get it moved. It's on a dedicated server that was on a contract. So that contract is ending now, and I'm moving it to a very inexpensive shared hosting plan to save on expenses. You know, it's not super profitable yet, but it is generating a little bit of money, and I hope to improve it over the next, say, 6 to 12 months. It's a cool app. It has a lot of features, and that's really what is I decided to buy it. It's got a great design, and frankly, although it's a competitive niche, it's a good niche. There's a lot of traffic and a lot of people buying in the niche, so it's been fun to get into more of a consumer niche because I don't really have many of those.
That's very cool. The only other thing that I wanted to mention is the future time sync for me was released a couple of days ago. And as we've mentioned in the past, this podcast is recorded a little bit in advance, but StarCraft II came out a couple of days ago. I've been resisting the urge steadily to buy it. And I actually went out to the website and I checked. My computer no longer meets the system requirements, so I think I'm safe for a little bit longer.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you probably need a screaming machine to play games that come out today, huh?
Yeah, but that's okay.
Good for you. You have more time to read and write code.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, today we're going to be talking about 6 steps for staying motivated. Mike and I have communicated with hundreds of startup founders over the past several years, and frankly, we've started to notice a pattern. There are basically 3 points during the creation of a startup where the founders are most likely to close up shop. And I've actually written a blog post about this in the past. I called these the danger points of starting up. And there's a point where, you know, looking for your niche, and there's a point right after you've launched when support just stacks up on you. But this middle danger point is what we're going to talk about today. And it's this big dip that you hit during the development process. So imagine that you've spent every evening and weekend for the past 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and you're barely making progress on your app. So your feature list is growing, and it doesn't look like you're going to launch for who knows how long, maybe 8 months or more. So this is a common case of death for small startups and micropreneurs trying to launch their product. And today we're going to talk about 6 steps to staying motivated while you're building, while you're trying to get to your launch. And a side note about these 6 steps, the reason we called them 6 steps and not 6 tips is that previous podcasts, we have listed a bunch of different ways or approaches to something. And frankly, we don't expect you to do all of them. I mean, it's kind of not humanly possible in some cases, but it's kind of pick the ones that fit you the closest or that will work best with given your life. But with these 6 steps, we really feel like you can and should do all of them if possible, because these are not mutually exclusive and they're not things that are such a stretch outside of a normal development process. In my book, if you can do all 6 of these, you'll be much better off. Step 1 is to track your progress from day 1. So what I mean by that is have an Excel spreadsheet or a to-do list of some type of Google Doc or something, and have an estimate next to every item. Have a detailed feature list for every task on the list. Now, this list should include marketing tasks and everything else you need to get to your launch date, including development. And you really want to break it down into tasks that are between 1 and 8 hours, nothing larger than that. This list is going to be big, right? It's going to be 80 lines, maybe 120 lines. I mean, it's going to be long. But if you have an estimate for each item, then you should have a grand total for the number of hours it's going to take to build your app. And it gives you a pretty dang good idea of how long it's going to take you based on how many hours a week you can put into it. And there's a couple benefits to this. One is upfront, you have an expectation of, bam, this is going to take me 6 months and I need to be prepared for it to take me 6 months. And number 2 is as you focus on a task, you can cross it off the list. There's a huge feeling of accomplishment as you're able to just knock these things out and get closer to launch and watch that hour total decrease.
I have an interesting question about this, because you did mention at the very beginning, use an Excel spreadsheet or to-do list or something along those lines. What I've done in the past is that I've used a bug tracking system for each of my projects. And what I'll do is I'll put in a feature and then I'll specify or outline exactly what that feature is, how long it's going to take. And then if I have any of those features that I want to target towards future versions, if I look at how long it's going to take me to get out version 1 and it looks like it's too long, I can essentially cut features up front and then push them to version 1.1 or version 2 or what have you. What are your thoughts on combining your marketing tasks into that same bug tracking system? Because I've always tried to keep those things completely separate. I've always tried to keep anything that's not a product feature request or a bug out of my bug tracking system. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, with .NET Invoice, we do exactly that. We combine everything. And we basically have in FogBugs that we use, you have a project level, which is .NET Invoice, and then there are areas, I think. They're kind of a sub-project. I think they call them areas. And so our areas are development, marketing, support, and something else that I don't remember. So we do. I have all my marketing tasks for .NET Invoice in FogBugs. And I have all the, we have all the development as well. Now, the reason that we've done it that way with .NET Invoice is we've owned that product for years, and it just it's the most conducive way to do it. And there's 2 of us working on it, and we handle support through FogBugs. So we get an email that goes into the queue, and then we can churn it around and pass it back and forth, respond via email, and then we can turn it into a development task if we want or close it out. So that works for that. When I'm starting a new project and I'm going to write it myself, I don't go to that trouble, just because I can pull out a spreadsheet and I can hammer out tasks really quick and marketing tasks and all that stuff into a spreadsheet and just line item very fast. You're talking 10 minutes or something. That's the only reason I've suggested a spreadsheet here. Certainly, if you're more comfortable entering stuff into FogBugs or if that jives more with the way you work, there's no reason you can't do that. And obviously, they have the cool estimating function where you can enter hours and it'll kind of graph out how long they think it'll take you. There's kind of a burn down chart and stuff. So that's a pretty cool feature. I have not used that on greenfield development because for me personally, it feels really cumbersome up front to enter all those tasks individually as issues. When I'm not working with other people collaborating, I'd prefer a spreadsheet.
All of that makes sense to me. I mean, it's just when I'm starting a new project, I always look at it and I try to put everything into the bug tracking system, but I really just limit it to actual product development stuff. I really don't put any of the sales and marketing stuff in there because, I don't know, I just feel like a bug tracking system is meant for tracking the product development itself, not really for tracking the supplemental things that need to be done to market and sell the product.
Sure. I can see that. I guess the issue I'd have with that is as a developer or as a, you're essentially a project manager at that point, you're trying to gauge how long is this going to take me? How much longer from today is this going to take me? I would have a tough time looking in Fogbugs for development and then looking somewhere else for marketing. I guess if you can do it and you can, you know, kind of integrate that, those two separate data sources, then, you know, obviously it's good. I think the other thing is most developers will probably tend to just focus on the development. And so the marketing will basically get left aside. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I have a month's worth of marketing. Like, I don't have a website. I don't have an email list. I haven't done any SEO. All this stuff that's just going to get left out if you don't kind of have it in your queue to work on.
No, I see what you're saying, but what I do is I actually use external tools for all my marketing stuff. I started out using Excel spreadsheets a while back, but I kind of switched over to this to-do task list manager application that I use on my iPad. And it's really nice because it allows you to just lay out all of the different tasks and you can put due dates in. It's not real good with putting specific amounts of time that things will take on there, but it's really good for putting things in and saying this has to be done on such and such date. And then you can put in priorities and you can organize them into different things because I have multiple companies that I run. So I'm able to organize them into different categories and flag some of them or star them or what have you. And anything I ever need to get done that is not directly product related, I keep it there. And then anything that's product related, I keep in my bug tracking system. I guess at the end of the day, you just do whatever works for you.
Absolutely.
So the second step for staying motivated is to make sure that your timeline is 4 to 6 months. There's a very specific reason for this, and it's because there's a very big drop off past this point where most people will give up on a product and never actually finish it. And in order to get to 4 to 6 months, you really have to look hard at all the features that you're putting into a product and start cutting them. Because if you don't, you're just never going to finish within that 4 to 6 months. And once you get past that, you are a lot less likely to finish and get version 1.0 out the door. And if you never get version 1.0 out the door, then it's very hard for you to get that last mile and be able to say, okay, I've only got this little bit left and get that done. Because as you start adding features, you look at the product and say, well, it doesn't have this and it should really have that. The fact of the matter is you have to get something out the door and start getting feedback because that's going to be a lot more important to you than having a bunch of code that's sitting on your hard drive that never actually turns into a product that you could try and sell.
This is one of the bigger mistakes that I think we see a lot of entrepreneurs make is just having a timeline that's 8 to 12 months. It is really, really hard to stay focused and eat up all your nights and weekends for that long. So this is something we really encourage people to do is to kind of do whatever it takes to get in the 4 to 6 month time frame. And that includes doing all of your development and all of your marketing tasks, your pre-launch marketing tasks. So building your sales site, doing your upfront SEO, building a mailing list, you know, all that stuff. So there's a lot more to it than just writing code. And, you know, this can mean that you need to outsource parts of your design or parts of some of the coding. Obviously, you may not want to outsource all of your coding. I mean, this is what we do. So you still want to have control of your app, but really looking hard at the tasks that need to be done and just honing them down and getting under that 6 month mark is critical.
As you pointed out, though, as developers, we were really hesitant to start outsourcing any of the coding because we are developers. That's our core competency. But one of the things that you can definitely look at outsourcing in terms of coding is things like your website. And I don't mean just the design. I mean the some of the back-end infrastructure behind it to gather email addresses or to integrate between your website and MailChimp or whoever you decide to use as your back-end autoresponder or to be able to work through that sales process and get the code in place such that you can actually take orders on your website. I mean, those are things that can really be done in parallel with your actual product development because they have absolutely nothing to do with it. They may need to integrate with a license key system or something along those lines. It's really not tied to the product itself. So definitely give some thought and consideration to outsourcing some of those programming tasks if you don't feel comfortable having somebody help or actually do the work for your core product.
Step 3 is to start your marketing early. Perhaps the worst way to launch a new product is to release the product to production on your launch day and email a bunch of bloggers and start working on SEO. Because you are going to sell a big fat zero of that product, and it's going to be a long time until you start making any money back for all of your effort. So something that we just pound into people of the critical nature of as soon as you know your product idea, register your domain name, get a site up. The first reason is because Google gives you more credibility the longer your site's been up, and you can start working on SEO immediately. So you find your target keywords and you get some content up there that's going to draw people in. Again, the longer it's there, the more clout you're going to get. And get a landing page up. Start collecting emails of people who are interested in your product. Have a blurb about your product and start drawing traffic through SEO and through your blog. Even if your blog is not wildly popular, you blog about the things that are interesting and those things will draw traffic from Google. And if there are niche websites in the niche that you're targeting, such as, you know, if you're targeting startups, obviously you want to get your blog post on Hacker News and that'll drive traffic to your blog. And then that'll get people over to your website, as you mentioned it on there. Or if you target photographers now and you can try to get your blog post published there, do a guest post for a popular photographer blog. And it just routes traffic back. And over the course of 6 months, as you build your product, you can build a mailing list of hundreds and hundreds of people who are interested in your product launching. And so it's amazing what a few hundred emails on your list will do to boost your confidence, because not only do you know that people are interested and that they're going to be likely to buy your product, assuming you've given a good description of it on the landing page, but you know that, you know, the first day that you launch, that you're going to sell some copies, that you're going to make some real money from all this effort that you've put forth. And the bottom line is all this marketing, kind of this SEO and blogging and word of mouth stuff that I've just talked about, it's good practice. It's good practice for once the product actually launches, that you're not a marketing newbie, that you've actually been doing a little bit each week to learn these steps if you've never done them before, and you've kind of learned the ropes so that by the time you do launch, you might have some relationships with some key bloggers, or you might have some more of an idea of how to tweak your SEO and your other traffic sources to get traffic to your website.
As Rob was saying, I mean, this is just incredibly important. This is not something that you can really leave out, because as he said, what's going to happen is you're going to start at ground zero for your product. And let's say the scale of the potential traffic that you could reach is a scale from 0 to 100. If you start that marketing process early, you might start in when your product launches at 25 out of 100. But if you wait to do any marketing at all until you actually launch, you're starting at zero. And you don't want to be starting at ground zero. You want to start getting sales on the very first day of your product launch. You want to start getting that money in, getting customer feedback, getting people paying for your product so that you can take that money and push it back into your product development or into your website design or all these other things that money could be put to good use. So you definitely want to start this marketing process early. Do not wait until the day the product launches or even a week before the product launches. As soon as you have an idea, put it out there. I mean, I have a website that's sitting out there now that's just gathering email addresses. And to be perfectly honest, I barely put a description up there and I started getting people who were signing up for the service and saying, hey, I'd like to be notified when you go live with this thing. So it's definitely worth the time investment of even just a bare minimal website to just describe, hey, this is what the product is, and then start gathering those email addresses so that when you do launch, people will be notified about it. So the fourth out of the 6 steps for staying motivated is to find accountability. If you have a scheduled time where you're interacting with somebody else about your product and talking to them about what you're doing, what your plans are, this is going to increase your chance of actually launching. Not only do you not have to do this in public, but I would actually recommend that you don't. And the reason for that is because as part of what you're doing, you're going to want to divulge details about exactly where you are in the process of building your product. You're going to want to be able to say, I'm having a problem with this, or I'm trying to implement such and such feature and it's giving me problems. And it doesn't really matter if the person on the other end of the conversation is interested in what you're doing or has any idea what you're talking about. My wife's a graphic designer and she humors me by just listening and lets me get it out, lets me talk about things. And she just nods and smiles and says, yes, dear, and pats me on the head. But basically what you have to do is you have to have somebody that you can talk to and explain everything that you're doing, and you want to be able to divulge the dirty details that you would not be willing to put online in a public environment. So there's a few different options for doing this. Here's 3 different ones that we came up with. The first one is to do a weekly in-person meeting. And this is obviously more preferable than the other two. These 3 are in order of preference. This one is much more preferable than either the other two because you get to explain things. There's an opportunity for asking questions. And it's just a little bit more gratifying to have that conversation in person. And you have to explain why you didn't meet a specific goal of something you were going to work on. And it's much more difficult to not be able to meet your commitments, because you don't want to tell somebody, hey, next week I'm going to be doing the X, Y, and Z, and next week rolls around. And you have to explain to that person in a face-to-face meeting why you didn't get Z done and why you only got X and Y done. So the first one is to be able to do this meeting in person. If that's not possible, try and do a weekly Skype chat with somebody. Just being able to talk about those things, you can still do a video chat if you have a webcam or something like that. If not, you can still just do a voice conversation. A phone call works just as well, but may not be quite as cost effective depending on where in the world that other person is. And the third one is to have a weekly post to a private community forum such as startuptodo.com or micropreneur.com. Both startuptodo.com and micropreneur.com have communities there that you can start talking to people and build relationships, and you can find people who are essentially in the same boat as you. And you can talk to those people, get to know them, and you explain your ideas to them. You hold yourself accountable to them, and they hold themselves accountable to you. And there's a little bit of give and take there where you can really open up and talk about the ideas that you have and the things that you're working on without really worrying about, oh my God, is this person going to steal my idea? Or you're not posting these publicly to the internet, so you don't have to worry about somebody looking at exactly what you're doing and how you're doing it, and then having them essentially jump the gun on you and be able to overtake you in whatever the niche is that you are addressing. Because all these people are going to have their own ideas. They're all going to be working on different things, or things that are different enough. That's not really going to be a problem.
Yeah, I think the key thing here that you did a good job touching on is all three of them, whether it's in person, Skype, or it's a post to a private forum, is that these things are weekly. I really think that even every other week is too far apart. You can just get too lost. You really need to have some type of anchor that pulls you back and makes you think about where you are, how much progress you've made, what you did last week, and what you're going to try to get done this week. It's a very interesting experience. I've gone through all three of these, in-person Skype and the private community forum, and all of them are just fascinating how it makes me during the week think about what I'm going to talk about with this person and what that I commit to and what am I going to try to get done. And it's not like the people that I meet with, it's not like they get mad or they scorn me or anything when I don't get something done. It's more of my feeling that, you know, I have to almost defend myself if I didn't get something done. And that motivates me to frankly put my nose to the grindstone and get stuff done that I committed to. I can't speak highly enough about finding accountability and how much of a difference it will make in not only your progress while you're building your app, but just in staying motivated. Step five for staying motivated is to find your optimal schedule. Nothing will kill your development progress faster than being inconsistent. And trying to develop between everything else in your life is just going to lead to a dead end, right? If you're like, well, I can try to get an hour in here and then 2 hours when I can, it's just, you're never going to make it. If you have 400 hours to develop, you have to have a consistent schedule where Tuesday night, Thursday night, you work 2 hours or 3 hours a night, and then Saturday at some point you work 4 hours. I mean, you really have to carve out this time, block it off on your calendar, talk to your significant other, and commit to that time as if it was a 9-to-5 job. Now, I realize this is not like the grand freedom, you know, that we all think about when we're building our own app. But this time before you launch your app is a heck of a lot of hard work. And one part of getting to the point of launching your product is figuring out your optimal schedule and getting your body and mind in a rhythm of writing code and working on your product and working on the marketing during these specific hours and not just cramming it into the nooks and crannies of the rest of your life.
So the sixth step for staying motivated is to find your coding triggers. And everybody seems to have something different. Some people like to listen to music. Some people like to listen to podcasts. Other people like to drink Mountain Dew or various ways of imbibing their caffeine. Rob apparently likes to get inebriated on wine. But basically, the bottom line is you really need to find whatever it is that will get you into that zone quickly. Because as a micropreneur who's working on a product, you've only got a limited amount of time to work on your product for the week. You really want to get into the zone as quickly as you possibly can, because you might only have 2 hours in an evening to work on your code. And if it takes you half an hour or 45 minutes to get into the zone to actually get some coding done, you've basically wasted that time because you're just not nearly as productive. productive. Whereas if you use those coding triggers or like start listening to music or drinking particular drinks and you can get into the zone in half as much time, you get that time back and you get a lot more productivity out of it. So whatever your coding trigger is, make sure you try and figure out what it is, because it is different for everybody and it may take a little while for you to figure it out. But as you start getting through your career, you can generally figure out what's going to help you and what isn't.
Yeah, I wish I could find a study to support this, but I am such a hearty believer in this kind of Pavlovian response that, you know, if you do something the same every night, like I'm going to drink a cup of hot chocolate and then I'm going to write a bunch of code. And if you do that for weeks on end, it will absolutely start getting you in the coding zone if you're drinking that hot chocolate. I mean, I've personally done this. I used to only drink Coke when I was coding and it was at a certain time of day. And then one time on a weekend, I drank one. We were at the beach or something. And I totally started thinking about code. It was crazy. And I like was obsessing about my app while we were at the beach. I mean, you could say, oh, this is just coincidence. But I've had discussions with other developers, and we actually had a discussion in the Micropreneur Academy, but it was kind of about these coding triggers and about things that you can do to really pull you into the zone quickly. And music does seem to be a big one. And everyone, again, has very specific types. Sometimes it might be heavy metal for you or very loud music in headphones, preferably if you're working at night. And other people like, you know, ambient music and Enya and other things like that. So I wish we could be more specific on this one, but there's definitely creating kind of an environment of getting into the zone. And I think, you know, we call this one find your coding triggers. It should almost be like find your zone triggers, because frankly, you're not just coding. I mean, you are doing marketing and you're doing other things besides coding, but it's easier to say find your coding triggers.
Yeah, I think what works for me depends a little bit on the type of programming problem that I'm on. So, for example, if I'm trying to do more architecture stuff or database design stuff, I like a lot more of the laid-back music that's more acoustic than anything else. And then there's times where if I'm working on really, really hard problems, I need the more heavy metal stuff.
Mike and I want to ask a favor. We need your topic ideas. So we've been cranking out topics now for 19 episodes, and we've had some really good questions sent in. And obviously, we're working hard on the podcast, trying to give you the most value for your 30, 35 minutes of listening time. What we'd like you to do is, you don't even have to send in a question. A question is a great format, but it doesn't have to be in a question. If you don't want us to read your name or URL on the air, we don't have to. We really just want your thoughts, what you'd like to hear Mike and I discuss on a podcast, and we'll try to turn it into a whole episode's worth of stuff. So you can email it to questions@startupsfortherestofus.com, or you can just post a comment on startupsfortherestofus.com, where we have kind of a blog that the podcasts are published on, or frankly, you could call it into our voicemail number. That's 888-801-9690. You know, if for some reason you don't want us to put your actual recording on the air, no problem. We're just looking for ideas, trying to provide as much value to you guys as possible. So if you have a topic idea, let us know.
If you have a question or comment, please call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690. Or you can email it in MP3 or text format to questions@startupsfortherestofus. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. A full transcript of this podcast is available at our website, startupsfortherestofus.com. We'll see you next time.